Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Tales from a Vet Tech with me, Tabitha Kucera. Today, I'm speaking to Fear-Free lead trainer, Mikkel Becker, all about how it's important for us to address our emotional well-being like we do the animals we work with, but also about how you can't please everybody, because both me and Mikkel have had experiences of being people pleasers, and we're not a burrito. You can't please everyone. And more. So I hope you guys enjoy. Hi, Mikkel. I'm so stoked to be talking to you. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Hi, Tabitha. You know, I absolutely love you, and gosh, I am so excited. We both have our unicorns with us. You have your step unicorn in your background on Zoom. And I have my, what would you call it? Pugacorn. It's a pug unicorn.
Pugacorn. Yes. It's pretty great, yeah. You guys.
Pretty awesome. If you haven't seen one. Also a mermaid. So
no, Pugacorn, I have not seen one.
Pugacorn mermaid. Pugamaid. I don't know what it would be. I have to think of something.
Pugamaid. Yeah. I have a unicorn, and then I have a cat unicorn that a friend sent to me after I got my VTS because they are the sweetest. They sent me all this unicorn stuff, but me and Mikkel bond over many things, including unicorns, but also, of course, our love for behavior and humans and animals. We're those weird people that love all the things.
Yes.
So I'm so stoked for you to be on here, but I figured to get started, I'm sure some people are familiar with you and the work you do, but can you tell me a little bit about you? And you have had a really interesting path to where you are today. And how exactly did you find your passion for behavior and training?
You know, growing up, like I always wanted to be either a whale trainer or horse trainer, or I wanted to be a broadcast journalist. So I remember watching the TV news and like seeing the anchor on there, and I was like, God, that's what I want to do. And I was probably maybe four or something like that. And I started going around with my little home recording device and interviewing my mom and my dad and my brother once he was old enough to start talking. And, you know, that was just one of the things that I loved doing, and creating videos and animals. That was just kind of a natural thing. I loved working with animals growing up, like from showing horses and doing like dog 4-H, horse 4-H, things like that. But I went into college for broadcast journalism because I wanted to be Diane Sawyer. Like, she was my role model, my hero, like, oh my gosh. Like, and she still is. I just, you know, look up to her to this very day. But she played such a pinnacle role in helping me to actually change my career from broadcasting into behavior. And it's kind of a crazy story, but I grew up with my dad being on Good Morning America. He was on there for 17 years. And so it was really cool because usually every Thanksgiving around there, we would go with my dad. He usually had a regular segment around that time, getting ready for the holidays and different pet products. And so we would go there and, you know, see Charlie Gibson, Diane Sawyer. And so she kind of watched us grow up. And, you know, I totally idolized her. Like, in my yearbook, my goal was to be the next Diane Sawyer, like, you know, total fangirl kind of thing. And so I'm in college, and it's the, I think it was the 30th anniversary party for Good Morning America. And so there was Larry King was there, Barbara Walters, like all of these different people were coming in. And amazing. So yeah, down there like starstruck. We're like, oh my God, you know, watching them come in. And, you know, and the day before, I had given Diane this shirt to sign for me. It said the next Diane Sawyer. And so she had signed it and returned it. And, you know, just true to her, she's just such a humble person. She put on their aim higher. You'll be the best. Love, Diane. And I was like, oh,
I love that.
Not
so
true,
much.
But that, yeah, it just like, you know, just like meant so much to me. And so she comes in the room, and I was just like, oh, you know, it's just like, oh, like we're like the light shining on her. And she comes in, and, you know, it's my hero. And I honest to God, I was just so shocked because right away she comes to the room, all of these different stars, but she makes a beeline for my dad and I, and we're sitting there at the bar. So maybe it was she needed a little alcohol, or probably I don't know, but she was like damned and determined to talk to me and to tell me that broadcasting was not the field for me, which is so crazy. She's like,
oh
yeah. So she comes up beside us. She goes, Mikkel, I've been thinking about this. She's like, you know, this career, she's like, this is dog eat dog. You know, people have razor blades in their pockets. She's like, you are too nice. You're just too nice of a person for this business. It's a mean business. And, you know, and basically it's just cutthroat. And she's like, you know, find something else. Yeah. And I did not want to hear that because it's my dream.
Yeah, it's probably gutting for a moment. Yeah, for
it sure. was. And I thought, oh, you know, she, you know, I, this is what I've always dreamt of doing. So it's like growing up and like, that's what I was going to do. And so it's just kind of shocking. Like, and I kind of felt like, okay, you know, losing my ground, like, what am I going to do? And so, you know, and it was combined with also during classes there, that's when everything was getting to be more and more syndicated. And so even in our right. journalism classes, they're trying to persuade us all to go a different path, which is so crazy when you're in yeah. college for this. And so I'm like, gosh, dang it. Like, what am I going to do? And that's when my dad came in and he's like, you know, Mikkel, you've always loved animals. Like, you've always loved working with animals and training animals. He's like, I think you should like think about animal training. And I was like, how would I do that? How would you make money on that? Like, how could, yeah.
No, for sure. You're like, I have never even thought
yeah,
about this.
Like,
yeah.
Is that a real thing? And so, you know, just lo and behold, it's just kind of things fell into place. And I was actually in a pretty bad marriage at the time. And it ended up, honestly, dog training, I think, was one of my saving graces during that time, because it helped me to kind of come back to myself. Because, it, you know, for anyone that's been in an emotionally abusive relationship, it's like you kind of, a lot of times you get to be smaller and smaller and less of yourself, and you're walking on eggshells. And like, I was just feeling so stressed all the time. And, you know, my self-esteem was just like, took a huge dive. Like, I felt like nothing at that point in time. Yeah. And then I went to the San Francisco SPCA Dog Training Academy with Gene Donaldson. And I just like, oh my God, it's just my, everything just kind of came together. It's like my passion came back, my life came back. Like, through working with these dogs, I was like, you know, I just felt empowered, both like, hey, this could actually be a career, but even more so, like, as a person, I was like, this is who I am. Like, this is what makes me happy. And like, so I truly credit like my career that has evolved since then through other schooling and different certifications. Like, I credit my whole path of working with the animals as really part of really what brought me back to like who I really truly am as a person. So I'm grateful for that. And I think it's a much better path for me than broadcasting, because A, I have no poker face, which I feel like you need that in journalism.
I agree. I don't have one either. Yeah.
I can see it's that. Like, my expression's just right there on my face. I have a hard time hiding that. Like, to have my own opinions too. And then B, I like to be able to be comfortable. And so to not have to dress up all the time and not do the makeup all the time. So that's another thing. But then, you know, most importantly, I feel like I'm doing work that really matters, as you know, like where it's like, you are really actually, you know, making a big difference in the lives of pets and people. And so it's like, I actually can feel good about what I do. So it helps me as well. Like, I feel like as a person, like my career, it's like, I help myself just as much as I'm helping anybody else.
You have the coolest origin story. Diane Sawyer told me not to do it. And then I did.
Isn't that crazy? I just remember being so disappointed.
That's the coolest story ever.
Like, so shocked. And you know, it's so crazy. I remember. So after that, Dan Harris came out with 10% Happier. And Dan Harris was also part of like ABC. And he had gone through, you know, he talks a lot about kind of what Diane was talking about, like where it is. It's so cutthroat, you know, backstabbing. You have to pull others down to get to the top. And it's very competitive and stressful. And I'm like, God, thank God she told me not to do it, because that would have been a really hard, lonely path, I think. And, you know, it's like, man, I'm so much happier now today than I think I definitely would have been.
And I love that story, because I think all of us, we all say like we can learn from things that don't work out. And it's annoying and cliche to hear sometimes, guys. I get it. But also, big picture, like looking back as we grow older, like, again, I'm having a lot of epiphanies lately with that stuff, being like, I'm so glad this thing happened because it's how I got to where I am today. And that's a very real thing. And you do so much good, and finding what we, I mean, I think a lot of people that listen to this podcast, we do what we love, and it's not always easy. It's commonly not easy, but we can handle the really difficult stuff because it just lights up. Like, it empowers us. It inspires us. Like, I still am stoked about my job most days. I'm a real person, mm-hmm. guys. They're not all winners. Okay.
I have those days too, where sometimes it's like you have those days where you're like, God, why am I doing this? And it feels hard. Sometimes you have those hard clients or you don't get the success. And then it's like, okay, then thank God. I mean, the good days definitely outnumber the bad. And, you know, it's like, even then you can still find that light, and that's part of being human too. You know, it's like no matter what career you're in, you're going to have those lows in there too.
And that's a really good segue because both me and Mikkel are very, very comfortable with being vulnerable and sharing stories that help make us grow and some challenging things. Like Mikkel mentioned her marriage and that unfortunately wasn't the best, but she got out of it. She grew. Mm-hmm. She has an amazing, supportive, kind partner now. And when you're in a situation like that, it can be hard to even think about having what, because we've both, many people have experienced this where you're like, all people mm-hmm. are like this. But there is a light at the end of the tunnel. And both of us, so I know, because not everyone may be aware, but you actually are the lead trainer for mm-hmm. Fear Free.
Yes.
Party. Don't be shy, girl. Embrace it.
Like a marker signal. Yes. Or my new one. Actually, what I've been doing lately is treat. Because I realize I use yes far too much. Just like right there. I'm like yes. And then I'm like, dang it. I need to save my marker signal for like only when I'm training. So, and then I notice I use good the same way. So I'm like, damn it. I have to use something like that's not a natural thing in conversation. So anyways, that was my clippy yes comes from using that as a marker signal far too much.
Oh, I love it. That's so funny. But we obviously both love Fear Free and we think it's really important mm-hmm. to address the emotional and physical well-being of animals. And me and Mikkel actually, we already knew each other, but we recently finally got to meet in person and we were like, we're best friends.
Uh-huh.
We have a lot of similarities and we talked a lot about how it's really important to not only focus on the animals we work with as a veterinary professional or a trainer and their well-being, but also our emotional well-being. Because let's be honest, guys, whether you work in animal welfare, shelters, training, behavior consulting, we tend to be any caregiving job. Many people go into that job because not all guys, but because they're people pleasers, which mm-hmm. I fall into this category. I'm working on it.
Too.
And they have a lot of empathy. I don't love the word empath. To each their own. I just have a negative association with it. But where we feel what other people are feeling on another level or however mm-hmm. you want to say it and what the animals are feeling. And I think sometimes I've grown a lot, I know, over the past few years, but sometimes we can forget completely to take care of ourselves or even to address our emotional well-being. Like something I used to commonly say that I don't say anymore, and it took a long time to break, is like, I can do everything all the time. I wasn't saying it, but I was acting like it. I'm RoboCop. I'm not human. I'm awesome because I don't rest. Oh, fuck. I hate mm-hmm. that. But that's what I used to say. And a lot of us in vet med say it. We're conditioned to like be like damaged or attacked if we say, I want to take my lunch, man, or I'm supposed to take a vacation. And I know people working in shelters and as a behavior consultant, even I told Mikkel right before we were talking about our holidays, I took 2 weeks off for the holiday. And I was like the day before I was going back, which I'm sure many people felt like this. I had super high anxiety. I was like, oh my God, I have to do everything, all the things. And my husband's like, just do one thing at a time. Don't focus on everything. But how has your experience been with all of that? Because I know you've been through a lot, like most humans, and you've grown a lot over the years. Oh my God.
As you're talking, the thing I was thinking about is like, and this is something I still have to work with myself on, is like not having a double standard in terms of like, I always am so much harder on myself than I am on anybody else. Like, it's like, I feel like, you know, I hold myself to this impossible standard, and I've gotten a lot better about that, about giving myself grace. But still at the same time, I'm like, you know, the standard I hold myself to, it's like really unattainable. It's unreachable. It's like, and it's not sustainable at all. And it puts so much more pressure on me And it's like, you know, whether it's, you know, how I perform with work or, you know, the way that I look or, you know, lots of different things that I've realized I have put pressure on myself for. And so it's like learning to, you know, and I'm still trying to learn how to do that, but honestly trying to look at myself as almost outward in some ways, because I feel like otherwise, you know, I will have these hard standards on me and it never feels good enough. You know, it's like, you know, when you think of people pleasing, it's like, honestly, the hardest thing to please or hardest person to please is really myself when it comes down to it, because I am so hard on myself. Yeah. And I project that onto other people. So for me, that's definitely something I've worked with kind of lifelong. And I have to say, I've gotten to a much better place with this, like where, and the biggest thing for me has been just not really caring anymore if I make a fool out of myself and and embarrass myself, because honestly, like, it happens all the time. And but that's just me, because I am goofy, funny. I like to dress up, you know, just be silly. Like, you know, like, for instance, I was just at a baby shower and all of these girls from high school, the very popular girls, the girls like I used to really want to impress and, you know, and always, you know how it is in high school, even when you go back for like reunions, you know, there's like still that feeling where you kind of go back to that.
Oh, you get those
feelings. Go back to those feelings. Yeah. And, you know, like before going in, I'm like, you know what? Like, I'm actually pretty cool. Like, I like who I am now. Like, and I'm like, you know, I'm just going to embrace me. Like, I'm going to totally fucking be me. And so I went into this yes. baby shower and I was just myself, like rather than like feeling like I had to please or and looking at people's expressions sometimes, which is one thing I've learned not to do so much, is to not care so much about their reaction, because I used to always try and like look, okay, how did they respond to that? Like, oh, do I need to, you know, appease that person? It's like,
and then like adjust your yes. behavior based on that, even when you weren't, obviously, if you're doing, Mikkel is not punching people and doing things like that, obviously, yes. but we would kind of, you would see their expression and be like, is my dress, like we yep. would create these narratives mm-hmm. in our heads, and then they didn't even, and half the time, let's be honest, this is what I remind myself of sometimes, it's like one of those mantras, yes, I have mantras, people, where I'm like, they're not even looking at me, I'm yep. creating a narrative, and they don't even yes. care what I'm doing.
Totally, totally. And you know, it's like when you go into that, and I think that's the other thing I've been working on recently within myself and realizing, is like, you know, whether it's been through, you know, abusive relationships, or it's been, you know, even in certain friendships or things that I wanted to attain, it's like in some of those situations I felt like I was made smaller, like, or quieted, you know, it's like, and I became less and less of myself. Yeah.
Quieted, versus yeah.
like now I'm like, you know what, like I just give myself permission to be free. Like, that's one of my tattoos on my wrist, is free. And like, when I look at that, like, you know, it just reminds me, like, I am who I am. And like, actually, there's a story that this makes me think of when I think of I am who I am. So I used to, I don't know if we've talked about this yet. I know we talked about a lot over some IPAs. So forgive me if I've already told you the story, but I used to be a lot heavier than I am now. So I had hypothyroidism, which is Hashimoto's disease is what it ended up being. So autoimmune attacks your thyroid. And this is during that abusive relationship that I was in, where I just was really, I mean, like, I was just a shell of myself, you know, shadow of like who I am. And, but I was also a lot heavier. Like, I was like probably like 75 pounds heavier. Like, I was, you know, I was a lot bigger. And, you know, and for me, I just felt so uncomfortable, because it's like my clothes didn't fit and I felt just terrible, insecure. And I was in this bathroom after, so my mom and I were trying on clothes, and everything I tried on, I felt like nothing fit, nothing looked good on me. I just felt so terrible. I went into the bathroom just to get a break, you know, because my mom's like, what's wrong, Kel? Like, don't you like anything? And, you know, and yeah. I was just like, oh, I just need a break. So I went to the bathroom, and there on the bathroom stall, it's like, I am who I am, and that's all I'll ever be. And I remember seeing that and just like busted, I just broke down, started crying. And I was like, God, this is all I'll ever be. Like, I just felt so worthless in that moment. And like, honestly, like, just so... just like nothing. And that honestly is like what I felt like in that relationship. I felt like a nothing, like I didn't matter anymore. And, yeah. you know, it's like, now I look at that and I'm like, I am who I am. And that's all I'll ever be. And it's like, fuck yeah. Like, now it's like, I am yeah, who I am. It. Like, Yeah. And I've gotten to the point like where now I love who I am. Like, and I feel comfortable with how I look. I feel healthy. I feel strong, like, you know, getting my thyroid fixed, but more so, you know, also just being in a happier place is like all of those other things have evolved, you know, where I've become physically healthier, but, you know, more so it's just like that emotional health and wealth that I've gotten to. And, you know, to be able to go in, whether it's with people from high school or it's professionally, like I honestly am my best when I am, you know, like free to be myself, because that is the genuine part. And I think that that's where we can, you know, find that hiccup or fall short is like when we feel like we have to be this mold, or we have to do something else, or we minimize ourselves or quiet ourselves. And it's like, no, give yourself permission to be you. And, you know, that includes things like my brother Lex. Like, I respect him so much for also, because he can be a little introverted, and he just is out there. He's like, you know, I need some time away. So like with his girlfriend, he's like, yeah, I'll go to this weekend thing. But he's like, I can really only do 2 days, because I know who I am. Like, third day, I'm gonna be overwhelmed. Like, he's right. Like, 2 days, like I can totally do that, love to do it, but I you know, 3 days is a little much. Like, I love that about him. Like, he's open about his needs, you know, and like, and I feel like that's, you know, how it is for me. Like, and I realize, yeah, I'm not the cool girl necessarily, but I think I'm cool, because I just, you know, it's, I've gotten to the point where I actually really like myself. So that's a big evolution for me, like huge actually.
No, that is huge. And I think the way you felt in that bathroom or that mm-hmm. day is obviously a result of a lot of different things, yeah. Including being with someone, you know, in an abusive relationship, that is challenging on a whole nother level. And like, kind of, I've never heard of it like that, but like being quieted, that I'm going to take that, because I think that's a great way, whether it's being quieted by a profession or a colleague or a friend or a partner, mm-hmm. And how understandably being around that all the time can 100% just take away all your learned helplessness, yes. Right? Like, I mean, that's unfortunately what when I'm talking about that, sometimes I talk about relationships with part, like abusive type relationships, and why it's because people who may not know will say something like, why don't you just leave? Mm-hmm. And that is not appropriate. Mm-hmm. Cause it is not that simple, but that's a whole nother podcast. Yes. So I appreciate you being so vulnerable and sharing those stories, and because both of us are kind of similar in the way that we are fucking bubbly as hell.
Yeah. Yeah.
We are very expressive mm-hmm. and bubbly and welcoming, but also we're really honest by saying like, for example, I'm bipolar and I have bad mental health days and things aren't always great, because that's normal. Mm-hmm. Like, it's okay to not be okay. And we're not exhibiting, what's that word?
Exhibiting, maybe, or expressing.
You listeners know. Maybe.
Oh, well, my other diagnosis in the meantime was ADHD, not that you can tell. But I got diagnosed as an adult, so that's probably why I missed your word. Sorry.
Oh, I'm so glad that you got diagnosed though, because yeah. It's such a, I mean, I know so many friends who unfortunately had to suffer with a lot of symptoms and think that there was, again, something wrong with mm-hmm. them, that, and this is just them. I mean, that's kind of how I've shared my bipolar thing. I was a little conflicted when I got the diagnosis, but then I was like, oh my gosh, this yes. makes so much sense. And
it's
explains
so freeing.
A lot of stuff.
Isn't it? It's like so freeing. Yes. And it's a neurological difference. You know, it's just a difference in the brain, like, you know, and wow, like how empowering is that? And to not, you know, I love that there's not such a stigma on things, at least not as much. I think it's, you know, certain people that are more old school.
Yeah, it's yeah. a process. We're getting there. Yes.
Yeah. Like, how cool is that to be able to talk about like mental health? And man, I wish I would have known that I had ADD back in the day. That would have saved me so much heartache. And, you know, it's, yeah it would have made school a lot easier. But like, yeah, it just helps me to understand how I work better. So that way I can actually work better when I am doing things. And that's really, I think that's why I'm so into doing video and working with animals, is because that's where I get in the flow, which, you know, it a lot of times for people with ADD, you know, you struggle with having enough dopamine to stay focused and, you know, stay involved. And so it's like, yeah, doing that or like interacting with people like you that I enjoy, like that kind of stuff is fulfilling. And that keeps me in the flow where it's just, you know, a natural way that I can focus. But yeah, when there are other situations like tax season, that's where my ADD meds are definitely a necessity, at least for me. But the cool thing is, sorry, I'm going off of this one of those squirrel things, but
no,
the
go.
Cool thing is with medications, I just love this part, is like where you can actually make those changes in the brain. And so like you actually create these neural pathways. So even when I'm not on medication, like things like executive functioning and, you know, organizing things like that, it's so much easier because you have this established habit, you create these new patterns in your brain. Like, I just love like how there are so many benefits that go beyond like being on the medication itself, if that makes sense.
No, yeah, for sure. And once you get an appropriate diagnosis, you can then, again, like I tell my clients all the time where I'm like, I understand I'm the first person telling you that your cat or dog is exhibiting a lot of signs of pain or anxiety, but this is great because then we can help your veterinarian and you get an accurate diagnosis and then get this managed, prevent or like, or treated even in some contexts, depending on what it is. And that's kind of like, I mean, I've shared, y'all know I get deep on this podcast. I'm fun, but I get deep. And I've shared like since finding the correct meds for me, I haven't had, like I used to have like, not many people hear about this, but like I would have like 4 or 5 days where like, I just could not function. Like I could not get out of bed. I'm very extroverted, as everyone knows who listens to this podcast. Just looking at my phone was challenging. And I always thought, that it was normal and I was exhausted. And then I figured out that that's not what exhaustion looks like. You're not suicidal when you're exhausted. Yeah. Like just, again, things that I'm very into mental health and I feel like I'm a mental health advocate, but when it's you,
it's so much harder.
You know, I literally was, and when I got that accurate, like correct diagnosis and medication, I was like, oh my gosh, of course I wasn't exhausted. Why was I? Like everything just comes together. And then I love how you said, because I've utilized that too, we are just like I say when it comes to animals and handling or training them, every animal is an individual and we need to work with them. And this is like, this is where I think as far as addressing our emotional well-being, like we do with the animals we work with, we sometimes can be less forgiving. Like, for example, I was just like, I'm just exhausted and I worked my, which to be fair, sometimes I probably was, but I just thought that that was a normal thing, which if I saw my partner doing that or a friend doing that, I would have been like, hey, I'm here for you. I'm concerned for you. I just want to, it's kind of like when you're in a relationship and someone lets you know when you've been in a really bad relationship and then you're in a more healthy one and you're like, oh, this is what, which then you have to learn what healthy looks like because that's a whole societal, that's a whole nother, again, another thing. But it's just really, It's really interesting. And I think even as animal professionals, I think we're even, because again, that caregiver, we're even harder on ourselves. Like, let's say, I'm sure, because we've talked about this before where like, let's say my cat was doing something or I wasn't getting as far as training. Like, for example, I think I was venting literally to a friend the other day or my partner. And I was like, I suck. I'm the worst trainer ever because I didn't get as far as I wanted to with a behavior. And my partner, who likes to remind me, he tells me this all the time to the point where now it's actually in the back of my head. Darn it. what would you tell a client? Because I know you would not say what you just said.
100%. That is 100%.
And that's where I think we need to have, like, how would I, because again, my partner's done it so much that now it's actually getting in there where I'm like, okay, I would never say this to a client. That's horribly inappropriate. It's wrong. And I would never say it. So what the heck am I doing? Why am I such an asshole to myself?
I completely get you on that. Like, and that was one thing for me, you know, with doing video work or really anything like including just like personal self-esteem and going into situations, it was like I had to kind of change that voice in my head. And for me at the start, I wasn't necessarily natural at being kind to myself because I was always so hard on myself. So the voice I put in my head was actually my best friend, Brianna, who has always been my encourager. Aww. And just that person who's so kind and like, you know, can, you know, gives grace and like, you know, so it's like, whether it's like, you know, what, and like now it's like, okay, what would I say to Brianna? What would I say to my daughter, Reagan? What would I say to a client? Like, you know, or in those situations where I'm not feeling compassion for myself, what would Brianna say to me? What would my daughter say to me? You know, and it's like, you know, it's, it helps a lot, I think, when we get stuck in those places.
It's a good exercise to, because again, it's a transition as me and Mikkel have, we've gone through a lot and we're continuing to grow, which is what humans do, which is cool, but also it can be hard to change behavior sometimes. So I think by doing that little, that's a little thing that you could start doing where, again, before my partner would say it, but I just didn't acknowledge it. Mm-hmm. Or in the moment I would, but I never thought about it in any other instance. And now I've kind of repeated the pattern where it's in my head where I'm at least starting to be like, maybe I shouldn't be so hard on myself. And again, kind of getting to a point where we are more forgiving of ourselves, but that took time, but everything takes practice. So I think that that's a really great place to start. Like, hopefully you have a support system. I love you guys no matter what, but I hope all of you have a support system, but I know that that's hard. But think about, how would you treat, because you're all such amazing advocates out there for the animals that you work with, how would you treat a client that just went through what you went through, or a dog or a cat? And just start asking that to yourself. And I'm not saying you're still not going to be hard on yourself, because we both still are, but it's a lot better. And that, I think that's a really great transition for something I wanted to ask you about, because Mikkel is out there all the time. She does a lot of lovely news segments and writes content and does a lot of videos for a variety of organizations. And of course, I make videos and share videos on like PowerPoints and on social media. And it has been, we are extroverted, but still it has been a challenge for a variety of reasons. A big part of that is we're really hard on ourselves, not just like, did we just say what we wanted to say? Do we sound stupid to our colleagues? Because that's something I think about more than I should. But also, did I look okay? Because let's be honest, that's going through our heads too. So as someone who's done a lot more of that, and let's be honest, the more we put ourselves out there, which I think putting yourself out there is really important, but it does allow you, the more you put yourself out there, does allow others to, I don't want to say attack you, but a lot of others are aware of you. So in your experience, what advice can you give to others for first off, just being comfortable in front of a camera, whether it's their iPhone, sharing a video to help. It might just be to educate a client. Like, here's how I medicate a cat, which videos are very helpful to teach people. Or it could be them actually sharing it in a news segment or on a larger platform. But then also, how about, or what tips do you have on dealing with like the negative? And again, criticism can be positive. We definitely check out the podcast that we did with Yona on criticism. It's a beautiful episode. But on dealing with criticism of putting yourself out there.
God, those are some really good questions. And so let's start off first with the criticism part, just because my mind is on that piece. So
yes,
you know, I think the one thing I was known for in high school, and I think part of it is just like I grew up with parents who always, you know, it didn't matter who it was, if it was a waitress or, you know, the person cleaning the bathrooms, like, you know, treated people with respect and like wanted to know about them. Who are you as a person? Like, hi. And like, you know, finding things out about them, like, you know, just having that compassion for people, I think was something that's kind of innate and also taught from my parents. So I was always known as like the nice girl, like in high school. But along with that, I was also a freaking doormat. Like I was a doormat. I look back on like high school and college being in the sorority, which my sorority got shut down. That is a whole other story, which is pretty fun, but crazy. Geez. And, you know, it's like, you know, in those situations, like, you know, and it didn't matter how nice I was, like, cause I guess for me, I kind of had my own little group, but I also got along with pretty much, you know, all the different groups. And but there were certain girls that were kind of the mean girls who just no matter what I did, they would never like me. And I remember my parents saying, like, you know, and listening or hearing a statistic once that like 10% of people will, no matter what you do, they will never like you. So even if you change something about yourself to help those people like you, then there's going to be someone else who doesn't like you. And so I started to think about that. And like kind of through, I think it's honestly going through those bad relationships and even friendships. Like I've gotten to the point now where it's become a lot easier to honestly, I thank you that we're on your podcast where we can cuss, you know, to really not give a fuck anymore. And like, I have that side of me that is, I call it my parents call it the Texas side of me where it's like, as in like, don't mess with Texas. Like where I have that part of me that's like, you know, if I am wronged or especially if someone that I love is wrong, like I will stand up for myself. And like, you know, I think that for me, part of it, is first of all, not reading all of the comments. If I get some of those comments, like it could be honestly something about, I think body shaming is a big one. So having, sometimes that will happen on my professional, Facebook page, for instance, like having a, you know, where there's cleavage showing, but it's like, honestly, it's nothing bad, but it'll be like, oh my God, why wanted to see a cute dog and I didn't want to see the chest or blah, blah, blah. It wouldn't even be anything bad, but I'm like, gosh, dang, like no matter what, but what's cool is like, I just honestly, most of the time I won't respond to those and other people will like jump in there and respond for me. Or I just say like my little piece on like, you know, this is who I am. And like, sometimes honestly, I will kick people off my page and I feel good about that because I don't want them on there. Like, honestly, there are people that just are so negative and it hasn't happened very often at all, but there are some people like where it's like, they just bring a negative voice to everything. And, you know, whether it's in the workplace or wherever, like, I mean, if you have something in your control to do that, like, why not? And, you know, and I think like realizing that no matter what you do, like knowing that some people won't like you, it just frees you to just be like, yeah, what the fuck? I'm just going to be me. Like, so that has been a big thing.
And that's something I've come definitely the last year or two, I've become a lot more comfortable with that by saying like, I always like, we've all heard of like the meme where it says you can't please everyone. You're not a burrito. And that is very true. Like you cannot please, because I am a people pleaser, and I'm not gonna lie to everybody, I do like people to like me, but I've also set some really healthy boundaries the last few years, where I think, and a big part of that was my education and behavior and understanding where underlying emotions come from in humans. And hey, this probably doesn't even have anything to do with me. This person was probably trigger stacked from something else. And then that also allows me not only to be kinder to myself, but also have more empathy towards other people. Like we've all heard that saying too. It's cliche, but you don't know what that person's going through. Like I had someone recently, again, there's a difference between criticism and just attacking. Mm-hmm. Like, and I shared a video of me handling a cat. And when I share, and so this is my insecurity. So when I share a video of me handling or training, I've gotten a lot better because you have to, let's be honest, you have to put less information. Like you can't explain everything, because then people won't watch it or it won't help people learn.
You want bite-sized videos.
So exactly. So I will commonly, I learned a way, I just narrate over it and explain everything I'm doing. Or for example, in this post, I literally wrote like it was an infographic and I put a few bullet points of everything. And one of the things was approach the animal like an individual and assess their body language. Like that kind of covers quite a lot. Assess their body language and change my approach based on what they were, you know, their assessment of their body language and all that stuff. And then I put other things that I did to help create a comfortable environment, cooperative care that we worked on in other contexts. So again, very short, sweet, but someone posted something and I was like,
this is where social media can also be good, because I can start conversations and be open and not judgmental and try to help educate others. And so I did. And then it was really funny. This is a healthy boundary, guys, that we all should work on. I was with my friends at a game night and I happened to see it. And I'm a person, and the thing the person said is something that triggers me a lot. We won't say what it is. But so I responded very kindly and professionally, but I was in a place, because my friends were like, don't respond, which they're right. They're right. Why am I responding to someone at like 9:30 at a game night? And I was like, guys, I get it. But this is, if I don't respond to this, it's going to bother me, and I'm not, which is not healthy.
I get that.
I responded. And then she responded back, and then it made no sense. Like, it was kind of chaotic and completely off topic. And then she started going into me euthanizing cats. Like, it was like, okay, this is not about, and that, cause my friends even said like right away, and I was like, okay, you guys were right. This is, whoa, this is a big jump. This is a leap. This is not. So then I kind of got more relaxed and just blocked the person, which is something that it's a bummer, guys, but I don't know if 3 years ago, even I would have done that. I would have continued to try to engage, which, guys, pick your battles. Yes. It's fucking social media. Mm-hmm. It's not gonna, especially because I think both of us, I put so much thought into the content I create, probably more. I rewrite it because I understand people take information and don't always critically think or apply. So I write it in a way where that kind of sets them up to do that. And I've changed the way I create content. But I mean, I'm not going to lie to you guys, I was really upset, even though I had 100 positive,
it's
positive comments or positive questions, right? Like asking more. And then one person, and I was like, so upset. Ugh. How do you handle, it sounds like you've gotten pretty healthy with some boundaries as well. Oh my
God. Boundaries. So that was the biggest thing, like coming out of that relationship, is that definitely, you know, not acquiescing to certain things. Like, when I know something is right, I know it's right. And my other tattoo on my other wrist says truth. And that helps me to, just when I look at it, and you know, one of my life mottos is to speak truth from the heart to invite real change. Like, you can't force change on people. Like, you have, you know, but by speaking your truth and honestly being authentic to what you think, what you feel, what you're actually experiencing, and honoring your own feelings and your own beliefs in that situation, and speaking up, like that's really where that change will happen, with those people that are open and receptive. And I, for me, that part of being able to live by truth and having truth be one of those guiding values, it for me, it's also been really empowering in those situations where I used to feel very intimidated. So whether it was speaking to a big audience with veterinary behaviorists or people that I'm like, wow, they're so far above me, like, how can I even talk here? Yeah. Where it's like, you know, I for me, it's like, I just speak the truth as I know it, and as I've learned, and I continue to learn, you know, that's the important part too. So it's not being stagnant in my own beliefs, but, you know, being able to just speak truth and not be caring so much, like, how do they perceive this? Who am I to be doing this? Like, you know, all of those questions. It's like, when I'm living by those two guiding values of being free and living under truth, like, those, honestly, that has made the biggest difference for me. So one other cool thing that I do, so before I go in and I do a video, before I do a talk or anything like that, I write myself a permission slip. And this sounds crazy, but it really helps.
I love this.
So whatever I'm feeling is like, so sometimes I might be feeling, you know, insecure, or I might just be like, you know, just feeling like, oh, intimidated, or whatever it might be that I'm feeling, I'll write myself a permission slip that kind of applies to that day. So I'll be like, Mikkel Becker has permission to, and then, you know, and then will be to, you know, to be herself, to be funny, to be outgoing, to disagree if she feels that she wants to disagree, whatever it might be. Like, so I just write out this whole permission slip. And for me, just having that, like, it helps me to get my mindset in the right place. And I honestly, that's been one of the best things that I've done. And it's one of those things, like, for anything that's a big thing coming up. Like for today, like I'm so comfortable. I love you as a person. I didn't even think about it because it's like I already am myself with you. But for those situations where I may feel less than or I may feel intimidated, writing myself a permission slip, that has made all the difference. And that is the biggest thing of videos is you have to be yourself. Because if you are trying to look good on camera, you're trying to be a certain way, like a lot of times people like stiffen up, they get just really, inhibited. And what you really want to be is more uninhibited. So you want to just be relaxed, yeah. Like how you would be with like your best friend, or, you know, maybe if that's less professional, maybe with your client, depending on what type of video that you're making. So for me, it's easier to make videos when I'm not having to look at myself. So I like it where I can frame the video. And so I have my camera set right there. So whether it's on my phone or, you know, I'm actually doing a video camera, I a lot of times won't be looking at myself on there because first of all, that can make your eyes shift and look like you're looking a different way than at the camera.
Yep.
So you want to be looking at the camera, but you also are speaking to the camera like it is your friend or like it is your client. So honestly, I visualize whoever it is that I'm trying to visualize there. So it could be one of my favorite clients that's just so good about doing the work that I give them, that's so happy and friendly or you know, makes me feel good and I feel comfortable with them. That's who I'm going to visualize there. Or if it's a more relaxed video, maybe I'm visualizing my best friend or maybe my boyfriend or whoever it is that I feel really comfortable with. So you are speaking to the camera more like it is a friend. And one thing that also really helped me is to be able to watch myself back and to be able to realize, like I had a media coach I met with one time after doing these videos. I know we've talked about this in the past. This was one of my moments. Like I love doing on-camera stuff because like my brother and I grew up doing that. That was so fun for us. But I started to put a lot of pressure on myself. Like I have to do all these videos. I have to, you know, I hope that this looks good. I hope. And I started to think more like, oh my God, like and started to think how is this going to be perceived? What are other trainers going to think and blah, blah, blah. And so in this set of videos that I did for vetstreet.com, which I worked for them for quite a few years, it was great. And, I love the video experience, especially with them. But I have a whole set of videos from that one shoot that I have a hard time watching, but I watch it back and I'm like, oh my God, it's funny now. But at the time it was like, oh my God, this is so bad. Cause I was on a teleprompter. They had me looking off the camera. They liked the angle where you look slightly off the camera. And I was really putting a ton of pressure on myself to do really well and to make these like look good. And so what happened, and one of the things like when I looked down later in the comments is, you know, people are like, is she blind? Is the dog trainer a blind dog trainer? And I was like, what the heck? Like, and then I looked at myself like, oh my God, I definitely look like I am blind because I was looking in the sun, reading the teleprompter, not really blinking as you would normally blink because I was trying to concentrate so hard.
You were so nervous.
So nervous, yeah. And so stiff. And so what was really cool for me, you know, was having the one media coach that I met with, his name is Mike Walters in Washington, D.C. And he just met with me for, I think it was only like an hour, but the cool thing that he helped me with the very most was he just told the whole video team, he's like, just let her be herself. He's like, if she wants to be goofy, she's going to be goofy. So he's like, and actually he's like, everything that you do, he's like on camera, it's going to look so much smaller. So he's like, just be yourself. Like pretend like he's like, who's your best friend? I was like, Brianna. So he's like, hey, pretend like the camera is Brianna. And so we did the initial video of me when I was, you know, trying to speak to script, trying to do this. And what I saw when I looked back is I saw myself really stiff. I wasn't moving around much. I look scared versus like, okay, I'm going to do the same thing. And I'm speaking like I would speak to my best friend. And that's where he's like, you know, if you use hand gestures in normal communication, use your hand gestures. Like, you know, you move, you know, he's like, when you normally talk, like you're going to move your head from side to side. You might look around a little bit. You're going to do different facial gestures. Like, so he's like, do what you would normally do and, you know, get comfortable. Cause it's like a lot of times on video, we may be standing in an awkward position or sitting in a weird way. Like he's like, you know, fix the pillows on the couch and sit the way that you would feel comfortable sitting. And like, just those little changes for me made such a huge difference. Like, and so honestly, it's like that advice of like, just be yourself, but truly on video, that is the best thing you can do is to just be yourself and pretending in a way that like that camera is your best friend or your client. And so that's what you're speaking to. And it takes off that pressure, which can feel really tremendous when you're trying to think of like, how is this going to look on camera? Don't even worry about that. You just be you, and that, and you speak the way that you normally speak. And that's going to translate the best when it comes out on camera.
No, I think that that is such great advice. And it's funny because I've gotten better on camera over time. And a lot of the issues with it ahead of time was, again, like self-criticizing, just being like, ah, this is not perfect. But then also being, I've gotten better, but being really not concerned about the general public, interestingly mm-hmm. enough, concerned about my colleagues.
Oh, that was me too.
Yeah, everyone's different, but because I had, I mean, it's a post, but I have research papers to back up what I'm saying. Like if again, I'm not saying everyone should do that. That is, but my learning history, I just like want to have a lot. But I was so, I'm getting better, but that was one of the most challenging things for me to overcome. And I had another colleague who was a friend tell me once, and this for me was something that really helped me be more comfortable. They said, Let's say someone is like being negative. And again, this is where this isn't a conversation. It's, let's be honest, it's probably not about me. I'm not sure what that person's going through today. And social media is rough for lots of, it's good, but there's some obviously rough stuff. And she's like, have they made videos educating people about this? Mm-hmm. And then she's like, oh, they have none. They don't create any content for anybody. And that was something that I it was really helpful for me because I was like, I understand because even in my videos, things aren't like I purposely take videos of real life mm-hmm. situations where I don't stage handling and things like that. Because I, not that I'm saying everyone does that. I'm not implying that, but I purposely don't do that. And so, again, there's no such thing as perfect, which is another thing I have to remind myself of a lot. But that was something that was really. Because she's like, you're making a difference with what you're doing and helping animals and humans. And that person that left a comment that isn't help because from a colleague, let's say, that isn't helpful feedback or even it wouldn't fall under the category mm-hmm. feedback. Because let's to break that down and define that as different. But she's like, what are they doing? And that I don't know why, but that really stuck with me. And then also, I had to record videos actually for my VTS process. So I was a mess for a variety of reasons. and because in that case, I mean, you feel like legit you have mm-hmm. to be perfect. Like if this is like a testing, which is a different type of pressure. And I should share you guys some of the bloopers because they are funny. Now that I watch back, they're very funny. But my partner actually, he came because I was recording them in my basement and he came down and he's like, how about I just watch you like talk yeah. to me? And that thing, like me talk, because in that I could not like guys, there was like 100 takes and I was just saying it wasn't with the animal. It was me talking about what I was doing without the animal. And I just mm-hmm. couldn't get it. Like I just couldn't do it. And he came down and watched me. Like, he's like, just talk to me about this behavior or whatever. And I got it. So I think that those are some really, really great tips. And again, everyone's not going to like you. And it's something I've gotten a lot more comfortable with. And to be fair, not that I don't want people to like me, but kind of like how you said your mm-hmm. truths, there are certain things where you know, this isn't about a difference of yeah. opinion. This is about a difference of like you have hate and other things where I'm like, I am not having this conversation with you. I'm going to mention I'm uncomfortable if I'm in a conversation with colleagues or friends, but like, I don't need everyone to like me. Like some people are going to want to, even after being educated, we're going to sit on the dog with 10 people and get it done. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying that that's common, but that's where you kind of have to like, that's another thing I've taught myself, pick yes. your battles, whether it comes to training techniques, handling techniques, but also like social mm-hmm. stuff. like homophobia and racism and all that stuff that more and more and more, like, we really need to say something and stand up for others and ourselves. And that's really, really important, especially right now. But that's, again, a whole nother podcast. But that's where, as I've gotten older, I'm like, I know people aren't going to like me, first off, because that's not realistic. And that'd be creepy if everyone liked me. Like, really, when you think about it, like, if no one I met, if everyone I met liked me, that's fucking weird. Like, I don't know. That's, see, I changed my perspective about it. So I think when it comes to making these videos, and again, whether you're doing it for your clients, which I think is a wonderful thing mm-hmm. to do that staff can do to help educate staff, or again, social media to help educate others, or again, another, like, going on a news show or something like that, just remember, like, keep learning, try not to be too harsh on yourself, and get criticism and feedback. Yes. But some people are just, I mean, haters gonna hate, mm-hmm. and it's sometimes it has nothing to do with you, and it's not worth it to lose sleep. Not that we don't always let it not bother us, but it's certain people, like, for example, this is a random example, but I was leaving a store and there was a truck with a lot of stickers on it. I won't get into what the stickers said, but there were quite a few. And I just walked past and I, you know, I didn't say anything, but it was really, like, enraging. where I was like, which again, we shouldn't judge. And of course, guys, but let's be honest, this happens. And again, I'm with my partner a lot. We live together. He was like, they just want us to get pissed. Like, that person, it's obvious. They're just trying to piss someone off. Like, this is not, like, they probably don't even, like, they may have all those views, which are outdated and inhumane and horrible, but they want to get a rise from people. So I'm not going to enable that or reinforce them. And, like, so again, pick your battles, man. Again, we went all over the place. Such a fun conversation.
When you were talking, I was thinking about the man in the arena quote from Theodore Roosevelt, and Brené Brown kind of popularized the man in the arena quote. Have you heard that?
So, guys, I know I'm out of the loop. I have not listened to any Brené Brown.
It's really,
I know,
good, it's insane. It reminds me so much of what you're saying right there, where it's like, you know, basically it's like, you know, someone from the outside, like, they can't criticize you. You're the one in the, you know, you're the one that's there performing. You're the one that's down there on the ground doing the work, you know, versus someone that's just out there in the audience, you know. And I will send you the quote, so then hopefully you can link it up. But it's really inspiring, because it just, it helps you to remember, like, you know, that's where you are doing what you're doing for the right reasons. And, you know, and you are abiding by your truth, you know. And it reminds me so much of the, you know, just that quote I saw in the bathroom stall, where it's like, you know, I am who I am, and that's all I'll ever be. Like, you know, who you are is awesome. Like, you know, you have the as you are, like, who you are is, like, you know, it's just this shining example of someone who is, you know, living a good life and also, like, doing good in the world. And so you are the one that's putting in the work. And yeah, for those people that, you know, sometimes we can get some of that feedback, like I got with my video on the one time when I was doing the teleprompter, that helped me to be like, okay, I need to change something. Like, yeah, I do look really stiff. Yes. I do look really awkward. And so, you know, I fix it just by, you know, getting that coaching help to feel like I was empowered to be myself and empowered to speak up for myself and what I needed in those times too. And, you know, so I think that piece is really important. And one other thing I wanted to also say before we end it, if you don't mind, this, you know, since this is such a podcast where I love that it's just so authentic and you talk about everything, as you're talking earlier about, like, you know, being able to get your bipolar diagnosis and being able to, like, really kind of understand yourself better, it makes me think a lot about, like, my grandpa Bob. And I don't know if I've told you much about him, but he committed suicide when I was, like, 9, I think. And really rough. He was bipolar. This is back in the day when they did all, like, you know, didn't have the right treatments, had to go, like, at the time was going through different shock treatments and all kinds of awful things. And, you know, but for him, you know, he just felt like there was something inherently wrong with him. Like, and so it's like when he would get really depressed and he would get really down, he felt like, I think he felt like a bad person. And so it's like he didn't want to bring this on us and to, you know, or for my grandma to have to go through this again. So, you know, ultimately he took his own life because he started to go down like that dark hole again, where in, you know, and it's like not only was that a horrible feeling, but he felt like so much of a burden because he felt like, you know, the world would be a better place, honestly, without him, is the kind of mentality that he had. And
yeah, I'm so sorry.
You.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, it made me think like, I wish my grandpa had that awareness and that grace for himself to see, like, you know, it's a, you know, a cognitive difference, like, you know, and to be able to, you know, realize what it is and to be able to, you know, get on the right types of medications and like to be able to, you know, or like for me with ADHD, like getting the type of therapy that I need, like, you know, to be able to handle that in a better way and getting the medications, like, you know, I love that we can talk about that because it helps it to not be such a personal thing. Like, it's not like, you know, like me with ADHD, like I used to think, God, I'm just such a lazy person sometimes, or I'm so disorganized, or, you know, it's just all these like kind of bad things you can put on yourself. Or like my grandpa, you know, to the extreme, putting all that stuff on himself to the point like where he just couldn't carry it anymore. And, you know, I wish that he, you know, and I think like, you know, I truly believe, you know, he's up in heaven and I'll see him again one day and,
yeah,
and all of that. But like, that's something I wish I could have told my grandpa is like, you know, it wasn't his fault and that we loved him just the way he was. Like, honestly, my grandpa was so special to me, so special to my dad, and brought so much goodness to me and to my dad and to those that really cared about him. And yeah, he would have those really hard days, those really bad days, but like, you know, the loss of him was just, you know, huge, I guess, for all of us. And I wish that he knew, yeah, how important he was. I don't think he knew how important he was to us. And so I know that that's kind of, I'm way back to what we were talking about, but yeah.
No, I think that that's a good thing to bring up. And I'm so sorry for the loss of your grandpa. He sounds like an awesome guy. And like you said, we're still struggling a bit with mental health and physical health in society, but 50 years ago, 30 years ago, it was rough. Even, I mean, not that it's not rough now. And something I always tell people when it comes to, because sometimes people are like, how can people not address the physical and emotional well-being of animals? Or they get angry when they find out, you know, as you learn things, you might, like, for example, I'm going to be honest with you. When I got my appropriate diagnosis, I was very angry for a few days. Thankfully, I passed it because anger is a normal emotion that you should allow yourself to feel. But I was angry because I was like, why the hell wasn't this diagnosed? Mm-hmm. Instead of focusing on like it is diagnosed. But I always tell people, we are finally starting to address physical and mental health in humans. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, we're getting to start to do that with animals, too. So it's for the positive, but we do have a lot of growing and progress that needs to get made. But again, we're getting there. Small behaviors into big behaviors. Things are changing for the better. Some days it's harder to feel that way. But, you know, again, very real. But I really appreciate you being so vulnerable and sharing your story. And I know, so also knowing that your colleagues and friends struggle, not that I want them to, but she's so great at videos. So hearing that she really struggled with them and she had similar problems that I did makes me feel less weird about struggling. Like how we always say, like, it's okay to not be okay and you are enough. And I remember hearing some of my behavior mentors saying, like, we didn't know what to do here and that's okay. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think more veterinary professionals nobody has all the answers. Nobody yes. does. But especially in vet med, a lot of us are conditioned to be afraid to not know everything. And I think that actually leads to a lot of the mental health issues, the perfectionism and lots of other, again, there's a lot of contributing mm-hmm. factors, obviously. So I really appreciate you coming on and sharing those stories, but also sharing some really great tips, because all y'all out there making some content, educating the world, we need you, you science-based yes, people out there.
Need your voice, you know, it's like, because all of a sudden, yes. You know, it's like, I feel like sometimes, you know, whether it's like my daughter, Reagan, she's 13, she's so into TikTok and like on there, you know, it's like, there are certain things that can be so cookie cutter, whether it's the same dance or whatever. It's like, yeah. You know, it's like, you're kind of watching the same thing over and over and over again versus like, no, we need like those unique voices. And so it's like, don't tamper yourself down. Don't quiet yourself. Like, don't lessen yourself. Be big. Like, if you are a big personality, you be that big personality. And like, you know, it's, you know, or whatever your needs are, like just being able to like speak it in a way that's really authentic to you and living it out that way, whether it's on video, it's in what you write, it's how you communicate with your clients. And also remembering that everybody, like, as we've talked about, everybody struggles. And this is one thing that I had a lot of pressure on myself to do is I felt like I had to have the perfect pets, like as a trainer. Perfect pets. They have to be so well behaved. Yeah. And you know what? Like with all of my trainer friends to, you know, veterinary behaviorist friends, like everybody struggles with their pets at times. Like, you know, and pets are just like people. We all have different issues, different things, different challenges. And like realizing that that's normal and that we don't have to be perfect and our pets don't have to be perfect. My God, is that a relief to have gotten to that point too?
Yes, that is a very good point. And I like to end the podcast by always asking my guests, what is something that makes you happy? This could be your coffee this morning or your holiday or something work-related as well.
Oh my gosh. What makes me so happy? But the first two things that came into my mind. So my boyfriend, Chris, makes me very happy because he's just so kind and so just caring. And like, it's so nice to have a healthy relationship and to take time. Like, that's the biggest thing with him is like, no pressure, just taking lots of time. And like, and I love that he's just such a good friend and truly like supportive of me and encourages me, like, wow, like having had the opposite. And like, I just so appreciate that. And then the other two that are right up there. So I guess this is three, is my dog, Indiana Bones, and my horse, Chili. Like, they're just the animals. Like, I think of them and I just smile and like, I get that different voice when I talk about them because they make me so happy. And so, yeah, that's my happy place is with Chili, Indiana Bones, and my boyfriend.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for being on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Tabitha.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. I will be at VMX in Orlando, Florida. So if you guys are there, say hi. I currently have blue hair, so I'm not too hard to spot. But definitely say hi. Let me know what you'd want to see on the podcast or if you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day, everyone.